Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears here, Thursday, August the 26th. 2021, 19 minutes past the hour, and we have a very special guest here in hour number one as COVID-19, the Delta variant, seems to have a grip on this country right now, and a grip certainly on Ohio and Marion County. Yesterday in the state of Ohio, I believe the numbers were  4,600 new cases. And in Marion County right now, over the last 2 weeks, we sit at 251 new cases. The vaccination rate in Marion County, 41.75 at this particular point. Schools are back in session, only one in Marion County with a mask mandate, and the Popcorn Festival right around the corner the week after Labor Day, the weekend after Labor Day. So with all that going on and a lot of questions, vaccines, schools, big events, masks, everything we've been talking about, maybe at a crucial level here, we turn to the president of Marion General Hospital, Dr. Curtis Gingrich. Dr. Gingrich, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Oh, my pleasure, Scott, and thank you for having me on.
Dr. Gingrich, I want to start right here with Marion General Hospital, because we are hearing stories from all over the country, Texas, Florida, and even some hospitals here in Ohio, that things are starting to get pushed to capacity, that rooms are becoming hard to come by, and that maybe even more importantly, staff. There's just not enough staff to treat all these patients. What's it like at Marion General right now?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I would say that we are seeing the effects of the increasing rate of COVID in our communities. As you look back at where we were maybe 4 weeks ago with only 11 cases or so in Marion, and how that moves is exactly what this virus does, as it exponentially almost grows within the community, and then a couple weeks after that, people are sick to the point, a small segment sick and need to come into the hospital, and after a couple weeks, some of them need to go on the ventilator. And so we're in the middle of that kind of rapid increase, very similar to the model that we saw in the winter. So from October to the end of January, we're seeing beginnings of that and on that kind of rapid acceleration piece. The unique piece this time is that we're trying to find a way to maintain treatment for both COVID and non-COVID issues. And so that places more patients needing beds with the numbers that we have right now for COVID patients. And we are, like in many industries and businesses and healthcare across the country, seeing a staffing challenge in several areas, mainly because the healthcare workers are really tired and fatigued and kind of burnt out over all this going on, and looking for other opportunities to either take a break, moving to part-time, or moving into other areas where they're not working in a hospital setting. So we're working through all of those issues as we ramp up for what we anticipate to be the fourth surge for what we're seeing here in Ohio and in Marion.
And we are on an uphill climb right now, it looks like. And all that being said, could there come a point, if things continue as they are, where there aren't beds available? You know, I'm seeing things out of Texas right now where they've got tents set up and they're keeping people there. And what happens if we run out of healthcare workers?
Yeah, if you remember back when this all started, seems like multiple years ago, it was just about 18 months ago, the governor had the ability to talk to hospitals and issue for through the Department of Health, stop caring for non-COVID issues to work through that. And you saw pictures of the large tent hospitals in Columbus. They used convention center as a place if we had a really large surge. And fortunately, we didn't need that at that point. So here in Marion, we continue to look at all the opportunities that we have around that. How do we manage efficiently getting patients out of the hospital? How do we take lower acuity things that aren't COVID-related that might have been in the hospital for observation for 24 hours and provide that observation care in the home or in a different setting? How do we manage decisions on if it gets to certain levels of surge that we would have to limit some types of either elective procedures? Those are the things that we're looking at and building those contingency plans. And fortunately, we're not at the point where we have to do that yet, but that's things that our teams are actively working on a regular basis to modify and adjust as we move forward here.
Dr. Gingrich, something that's not getting a whole lot of attention, but is a staggering, frightening number, is that in August, a year ago, the first year of the pandemic, August of 2020, no vaccinations at that point. We never had a day in Ohio where the new case level was over 2,000, really not even close. There were very few days in August of 2020 where we went over 1,000 cases, and if we did, it was 1,200, maybe a 1,500 day. Yesterday was 4,600, the year of vaccinations being free. How does that happen?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it leads to a lot of that emotional piece that people feel around this issue. The vaccinations, when they came out in December, provided a huge amount of enthusiasm and hope. And the way that those vaccines work, and I won't get too complicated into the science because I don't remember it all from way back in my biology and chemistry days, but when you get a vaccine, especially the COVID vaccine, it creates antibodies. And then over time, it creates, those antibodies have memory cells that if it's re-exposed to that virus, will start making antibodies again. So what keeps you from getting infected in that time when this is in pandemic levels is the antibodies that you have. And so as we get further out from when people were vaccinated and as the virus continues to spread, it mutates. You start seeing varying effectiveness of those vaccines, and that's where you'll hear a lot of talk about, do you need a booster shot or do you need a third shot? And you saw the CDC come out and say, in those immunosuppressed people, higher risk of not mounting a good immune response, they're now recommending a third a booster, or a third in the series is kind of how they're talking about it. And so what we're seeing is nowadays we have some time that has elapsed from the time when people had the vaccinations. And we have COVID fatigue on the community's part. So the things we know work based on the evidence is social distancing, wearing a mask, staying home when you're not feeling well, good hand hygiene. Putting all of those things together keeps us from spreading the COVID virus. And so the combination of that time, the mutation of the COVID-19 virus and the COVID fatigue we're seeing in individuals, I think is contributing to this larger increase in the number of infections that we're seeing.
Now, last winter, we all remember November, December, and January being pretty awful. And I know at that time we spoke and things were pretty hectic at the hospital. Now, what is worrisome right now, we're not there, but as I just said, in August of 2020, we had some 1,000 new case days, not very many. Right now, sitting in August of 2021, 4,600 new cases yesterday, and still on the uprise is my understanding, we haven't had numbers like that since November of 2020. And if 1,000 cases days in August of 2020 gave us 4,000 case days in November of 2020, what are 4,600 days in August of 2021 going to give us in November and December when people are inside?
Yeah, it's a great question. And the things that we're looking at, the modeling that is coming out from the experts on that are showing, beginning to show as we see how this plays out, because we know this Delta variant that we're seeing and is predominant in the United States and certainly in Ohio right now is infects more people. It's quicker to be able to pick up the infection. The fortunate thing is, at this point, is that those who are at highest risk of hospitalization, those over 65, we have some higher vaccine rates in them. So we are seeing a younger population that are coming into the hospital, still predominantly the unvaccinated, and really, even when you move into the critical care units or on the ventilator, still at this point seeing a very mismatched number, that the predominant people that are in that level of severe illness are those that haven't received the vaccine. So we're seeing the models that look like this is definitely the fourth surge, looking very similar to what we had in the winter. And so for us, it's looking at how do we prepare if and when we see those larger number of cases. And then the other kind of variable out there is, if the COVID-19 virus mutates to something that becomes less, that makes the vaccine even less effective, because they're very effective right now, that could actually change this as well. So a lot of unknowns still to come, but very worrisome signs, and would really just plead with the community to do the things that we know can help. I know we're tired, but wearing the mask, right now it's recommended for even vaccinated people because of the lower antibodies that come as you move out from the illness, to wear your mask when you're indoors, social distance. Think about that. The recommendation is, if you're in large gatherings like large stadiums for events or the popcorn festival that was mentioned, consider wearing that mask even around there, because the risk is higher right now and as high as it was in the winter months to potentially contract COVID-19.
Doctor, I hate to ask the question like this, because we're all optimistic and we're all positive in our hospital. We all have faith in our hospital. I'm not speaking out of turn. We all feel we have a great hospital. But with the models we see right now, is it logical to believe that if the winter is four times what it was last year, which is with the contagious nature, the low vaccination rate, and just where we are sitting in August, not to mention the variants of this that could come out between now and then that the vaccine might not cover, is it conceivable that the hospital could really handle that? I mean, we know you'd try, but four times as high as it was last year?
Yeah, it is the piece that we continue to plan for, and we will do everything we can to continue to care for the patients in our community and the surrounding communities. The fortunate thing that we have as Ohio Health Marion General Hospital are 12 other hospitals as part of the system to be able to manage in that care, move resources, and help to function in that. So then you move into the triaging of patients. So there are a lot of things that we have in the works and able to levers we're able to pull to make sure that we still provide quality care to the patients here in Marion. But it is really dependent on everyone in the community can make a difference here to help support that by doing those things we talked about. It's sometimes tiring to keep hearing it, but it's the things that we know we can do. It's to wear a mask when you're indoors in public settings. Consider wearing a mask and wearing a mask in large outdoor settings, social distancing, and getting the vaccine, because it's the most effective thing that we have to prevent serious illness and hospitalizations. And to me, the other part of this that we think about, we focus a lot on the healthcare part, but the economic impact, if we get back into a large surge with where most businesses are from a staffing standpoint, we will find our economic engine slowing down or even needing to stop just because of so much illness. So to really make a difference for our community and for each other, we need to gain up some energy and strength and courage and keep doing those things that we know help us to lower the spread of this infection.
We talked about the age of people coming into the hospital now much younger than it had been in the past. What is the condition that we are seeing in Marion General? Are people coming in with coughs and sneezes and body aches? Or are a lot of people having to be treated in the hospital or on ventilators?
Yeah, we're seeing what I would say mirrors what other parts of the country who are ahead of us are seeing in terms of the way the symptoms are. There's still symptomatic patients coming to the hospital are still coming in with those same symptoms, shortness of breath, cough, fever, headache, those common COVID symptoms, and then low oxygenation because of the injury and the irritation to the lungs. We are seeing younger people being admitted this time comparatively. Don't understand if that's yet, as we look at the research and the literature, if that's just because the more elderly population has been vaccinated. And so we're seeing that now, but we are seeing that group more commonly in the hospital. That age of hospitalization has gone down. And we're seeing, so I think less patients moving into being on the ventilator or passing away from that, but we are seeing that, and unfortunately we're seeing some younger individuals who are succumbing to this COVID virus, and it's very similar to what we're seeing in other parts of the country.
If you are already vaccinated, we've talked about these breakthrough cases in society. How much of that are we seeing in Marion?
It's hard to determine how much for the breakthrough cases. We're seeing the last numbers I saw was around 85% or so of patients who come into the hospital here, between 85 and 90% are unvaccinated. We're beginning to see across the state that number dropping, so that we're seeing a few more vaccinated cases coming in. And so the question is that time? We've been out another month from when this all kind of started to ramp up, or is there a mutation that's occurred? We don't regularly test every patient to see what COVID-19 virus they have, but we as Ohio Health send samples off to the Ohio Department of Health who measure that. And so we're trying to get information back and see, are we seeing that the Delta variant has mutated in some way? We don't know any of that information yet. But as we see those numbers start to drop, that's the piece that's going to really help. Knowing that will help our researchers and scientists make decisions on what we do with the vaccine if it needs to be modified. The really good thing is these mRNA virus vaccines can be revamped to help us manage that much differently than what, like, the flu vaccine can be done. That process is much more, many more steps and much more labor intensive. So this new technology that's been studied for almost 20 years and now being utilized gives us a really good chance to be more nimble and if we see a mutation that the vaccine is no longer helpful for.
A vaccinated person who comes in, what are their symptoms like? Do they end up on ventilators? Do they have to stay at the hospital? Or is it all across the board just like anybody else?
Yeah, most times a vaccinated individual has the last numbers I saw with the Delta variant has about a 3 to 5-fold decrease in getting infected. So that's the first protection that's there. And then about a 20 to 25-fold decrease of needing to be hospitalized or death from COVID. So we're seeing usually milder symptoms. And we're seeing less need to use our intensive care units or ventilators for these patients at this time.
Doctor, some things that are going on. Football season, I believe, starts this Friday, and there are zero mandates there for masks. Anybody can get in, is my understanding, and you can sit as close to anybody as you want. The Popcorn Festival comes up the weekend after Labor Day. They say 100,000 people to 250,000 people visit the streets of Marion in that 3-day period, free entertainment. That doesn't seem, there are no safeguards on that, and I talked to the mayor on Tuesday, and they fully plan to go ahead with the Popcorn Festival. I was just in Bucyrus this past weekend. The Bratwurst Festival was as busy as I've ever seen it, and I saw maybe 2% of the people wearing masks in a county that is 41% vaccinated. What does this say to you?
Yeah, it says that even myself, really tired of having to limit my activities in that little period of time we had where the CDC, based on the evidence at that time, was saying, you know, vaccinated people didn't have to mask up, and we could get out and make human connections again. There's a resistance to needing to do this again. And so it's all a measurement of risk and benefit. And the recommendations and what I'm doing for myself and recommending for others are those pieces of trying to social distance, wearing a mask anytime you're indoors, and consider wearing a mask and should wear a mask if you're outdoors and can't socially distance, especially in large crowds. Whether or not someone chooses to go to this or event, organizers decide what to do with that. That is a tough decision and need to be balanced in that risk versus benefit. So to me, it's that personal protection that every individual has to make a decision on. And then what we're doing here in the hospital is planning if there would be a growing surge, and we anticipate a growing surge given the prevalence of COVID in Marion, how we will continue to manage and provide that care and continue as long as possible and as much as possible to care for all of the non-COVID needs as well. So it's a tough situation as we think about events, but a personal choice in how you can, each individual and you can make a difference is following those guidelines of mask wearing, social distancing, and if you're not feeling well, staying home so that you don't inadvertently infect others.
And that's vaccinated or unvaccinated people.
Yeah, right now, because of the Delta variant, the CDC has recommended that for both vaccinated and unvaccinated, due to those antibodies kind of dwindling, the memory cells will kick in if you get infected, and that's what keeps you from needing to come to the hospital or lowers that risk of death. But that risk of infection is still high in that at this point because of the Delta variant and what you're seeing in terms of those, that initial antibody response. Naturally, what happens is starting to wane a little bit.
We talked a lot about super spreader events. That term is not used like it was last year, but certainly the Popcorn Festival would have to be considered one of those here in Marion County, and we live in Marion County. It's going to go on. Should it go on at this point with 4,600 new cases yesterday, and we've still got some weeks to go before this?
Yeah, it's a great question. I'm sure those who are organizing the event, if it were me, would be weighing those risks and benefits well. I'm not in a position to say whether it should or should not go on. I think individually, each individual will have to make a decision on how they will participate. If you think about the highest risk, indoor activities and a high prevalence of COVID-19 are high risk. Outdoor activities are lower risk, and socially distanced outdoor activities are next to the lowest. The lowest is not to just to stay isolated in your home, but that's not healthy either. So everyone's got to make a decision on that risk of what they're willing to do, how long they will be at the Popcorn Festival if they go, how they will interact with other people in the community who are there. So it's really a risk-benefit analysis that each individual, unfortunately, has to make a decision on. And so taking good precautions and then making that decision for yourself is going to be the best decision that people can make.
Schools have been a major topic of conversation everywhere. Now, in Marion County, we have 5 school districts. At this point, it's still my understanding that the only district within Marion County that has a mask mandate is Marion City Schools. The other 4 do not and are back full-time at this point. Governor DeWine was on television, I believe, last week, and he said, "I no longer have the power because of the legislature to mandate masks in schools like I did last year. But think about it, districts who don't have a mask mandate. And also, if there isn't a mandate, wear a mask. This is what the governor is saying. Should schools have mask mandates? Because now they're saying we're turning to the health professionals to let us know, because the politicians are seemingly out of this at this point.
Yeah, the governor and the Ohio Department of Health had can now only make recommendations in many of those cases, and so it isn't as easy to rely on someone else to make that decision. So about the only other place where I wouldn't want to be than a hospital president and a hospital healthcare worker, as we're continuing to work through this, even worse would be to be a school board member trying to make some of these decisions as well, given the polarization in our society about this. But I think that and there's a lot of confusion, because early on in the pandemic we did not see transmission in the school systems, and there's not clear knowledge if that's because it doesn't impact younger individuals, or if it's because of the hybrid class models, the social distancing, the mask wearing in the schools, probably a combination. What we're seeing now with this Delta variant is an increasing incidence of COVID-19 infections in younger individuals. And we're seeing some school systems across the country who have went to school quicker and earlier than we did here in Ohio and in Marion County, showing large numbers of both students and teachers needing to be quarantined, and some infection that's occurring there, and especially in those schools that aren't requiring masks. So I think for me, my kids are older now, so I don't have to think about this, but for me, I would be having my children wear a mask while they're in the school building, because of those risks. And then the other component of that is any child 12 or older has the opportunity to get vaccinated, and I would be moving down the path of vaccination for my children as well, because that's the piece that we know can prevent that serious infection, can prevent that overwhelming of the healthcare system, and for the individual, for that family, having to go through a critically ill child or you know, unfortunately, even death in some cases.
Dr. Gingrich, things seem a little confusing here this week, especially in Ohio and even in this area, because we saw the FDA approve the first vaccination that they have approved in regard to COVID-19, the Pfizer vaccination. Because of that, schools and businesses now are allowed to mandate this vaccine at this point, which is what we're being told. Now, who knows what the legislature will do? There are also talks in that department right now, but right now that's the way it goes. And Ohio State has taken this. Biggest university, I believe, in the state has come in and said staff and students must be fully vaccinated at the Ohio State University. Now, this is the college level, but yet the little kids in elementary, middle, and high school don't have that. Does this picture seem odd during the midst of this pandemic?
It fits just the messiness, if you will, of making decisions inside, you know, scientific decisions and evidence-based decisions inside a pandemic. We currently alive today have never experienced this, but science needs time to understand, build hypothesis, test it, validate it, and move forward, and we're making decisions as quickly as we can with the amount of evidence that we have. So you saw that with the vaccines being deemed by the FDA having emergency use authorization. We did studies just like we do all studies, and they didn't, before they had time to see all of the information and play it out on a wider scale, they moved to emergency use authorization because the benefits were so extraordinary. Now they've had all that other evidence, and they're able to say, this medicine, we're comfortable, is safe, and have given it full approval for the Pfizer vaccine. And I would expect the Moderna vaccine and others to receive that down the road as well, at least based on some of the things that we're seeing in early reports. So what that means, the ripple, is that industry and businesses now have to decide how to protect, how to manage their workforce or the people that they come in contact with. So it does give people, businesses and universities and school systems the opportunity to make some of those decisions. But it really comes back down to individuals as well. That's where we really like to sit in the United States, our individual rights and freedoms, and would encourage each individual family and person to get the right information, make sure you're getting facts, and then make that decision for yourself whether you should be vaccinated.
You know, Dr. Gingrich, certainly we want to make our own decisions. We want to do our own thing. This certainly has been proven in the United States of America. But left up to our own devices for the last 9 months, vaccines absolutely free. There are certainly no more lines here in Marion County, at least, to get it. Left up to our own devices, the vaccination rate is 41.75%, and we're in an August where yesterday, as I say again, 4,600 new cases were just in Ohio. So is this going to have to be something that's mandated now that the FDA has come in? Because left up to our own devices, we're not doing so hot.
Yeah, I agree. The need for vaccination and individuals to get vaccinated is the thing that will help our economy keep going and will help our health systems be able to care for all of the COVID and non-COVID needs that are out there. I don't know. Each business will have to make that decision as they think about what they need to do. If they need to protect their workforce and provide that for them, they're gonna be able to make that decision. We'd like it to be each individual, but we deal with this in other less lethal ways. So smoking, for example, we all know that smoking causes a lot of illness, heart disease, cancer, stroke, emphysema, and yet we see people that still continue to make that decision. From a healthcare perspective, we're here to care for those needs and try to help people prevent illness and achieve their best health by finding ways to try to help people to quit smoking. In the COVID situation, in the unknown, we're here to say this is what the evidence shows. The vaccines are safe, they're effective, and anyone 12 and up should get vaccinated. And then if they don't, and if we get into this surge like we're in right now, it is part of it is a result of the low vaccination rates. And so highly encourage and recommend people make that decision and go get vaccinated to protect themselves, their family members, and others they come in contact with.
You know, Dr. Gingrich, it's unbelievable to me in a way that we're going to still have the conversation we're about to have, but it's still there. Masks. This really, yes, vaccine, the vaccination conversation is there, and yes, the mandate conversation is there, and yes, the FDA conversation is there, but really, this mask has become a symbol of something. I'm not exactly sure what it is, but is it effective? Is it not effective? Does it protect you? Does it protect the other person? Does it work at all? What is the story behind the masks?
I saw recently a friend on social media had changed their picture to a mask with a big red circle and a line through it. And so it is clearly a polarizing subject. I think about it as a physician and someone who's done a lot with patient safety, that we use a model called the Swiss cheese model, meaning that to prevent an error and inside a human behavior situation, one thing will not stop that error. You need layers of safety precautions so that if the error makes it one step past in that process, there's another layer that's going to stop that. So like a hole in the Swiss cheese, it doesn't make it through the whole block of Swiss cheese. And masks are one of those layers. We know that the masks have significant protection against spreading of the COVID-19 virus. The virus is a small particle, but it's usually attached to a droplet, a larger particle, and that's how it gets spread when you sneeze or you cough. And that mask helps to limit the spread and how that virus comes out of your mouth and nose. We know that if you have a mask on, and someone else is infected, that that mask does provide some protection, a lot of protection, in preventing you from getting exposed to that virus. So when you take the mask with social distancing, with good hand hygiene, and if you're ill, staying home so that you don't have a risk of spreading an infection to someone, all of those things together significantly lower the risk of getting COVID-19. And so that's where the masks come in hand. It's not 100%, just like most things that we do are not. It's a grade of risk, and this one significantly lowers your risk. And so mask wearing, we know that the surgical type masks, the loop masks, the yellow ones or blue ones or black ones that are two layers are very effective for the general public. In a hospital setting, when you're taking care of COVID patients or in high-risk procedures where there could be spread of virus in some of the procedures we do, we wear N95 masks, which are even more protective. And the cloth masks have some protection as well. So in the general public, using some type of a mask is really helpful at lowering the transmission of COVID-19.
You know, Dr. Gingrich, I want to spend a little time talking here about what has become known as the COVID long haul patients, because as cases grow and are continuously growing now at a very high rate, we're seeing people who are surviving COVID. They're not dying from this, thank goodness, but they're having breathing issues, I think, are the big one. People are having brain fog and things of that nature, but I think having breathing issues would probably be at the top of anybody's list if you did not have them before. Now, I've been told from other doctors that this is happening, but the good news is that for some reason or other, based on COVID, that it does get better. It can take a year sometimes to get better. There's really no way to treat it at this point, but it does get better as opposed to something that permanently damages your lungs. Is that right or is that wrong?
It's a great question that, from my perspective, not a lung specialist, I'm a family doctor by training, but it's one of those things that I've thought about for a long time and trying to watch the literature. It will be one of those things that science helps us understand over the next several years. How much damage is chronic or lasting in the lungs after a significant COVID-19 infection and pneumonia? And I think that early signs are that because of the reserve that we have in our lungs, we have lungs that have a very high capacity, that getting back to functional health over time is what we're seeing in most patients. I think as patients then age or move through other illnesses, it will be something that we'll learn about. How does that impact us if someone then does develop a pneumonia or develops emphysema after that, or other conditions that could, that scarring or injury to the lung, is it just acute and then subacute and within a few months goes away, or is there something that takes away some of that residual, that extra, that we reserve that we all have, that will impact us later in life? And so we're going to be learning about that, I think, for the next 20-30 years as it goes through. But right now we do see a lot of people, most people recover, some people move into that long haul syndrome, and most of them get back to their functional status in a period of months.
You know, doctor, and we don't want to think the worst, but sometimes we have to plan ahead that way. If it would get to a point, because the mandates are gone, the training wheels are off, as they would say here, as we head into winter, as we head into fall, even when more people will be spending time indoors, as we head into that, what happens if things do reach to capacity? Because the conversation I'm hearing is, it's not really going to be, can I get reelected or not, which unfortunately is where a lot of this is laying now. It's not really going to be in the legislature's hands. It's going to be in the hospital's hands. Because if the hospitals start to get overwhelmed and do not have the capacity to take care of their patients, not just in Marion, anywhere in the United States, that will wake up the politicians who make the rules, whether it be local or state or national at this point. Is that really going to be the driver in this?
Yeah, it's a great question. And when I think about that, I rest on my relentless optimism that we're going to make it through this. Relies not on the politicians, but on each individual citizen and the public. Communities in crisis, and when there's bad events that occur, almost always band together and end up doing the right thing. And so as we start to move into this fourth surge, I'm optimistic based on what I saw happen in November, December, and January in our community. Leaders in businesses, leaders in schools, mothers and fathers, people made decisions to limit some activity for the good of the community, and it was felt. It was palpable here in the hospital. Our nurses, our respiratory therapists, our providers all recognized that the community was making sacrifices to make sure that the hospital could still function. And I believe that if we get into that situation again, we will continue to see people band together and to do that. If for some reason that doesn't work this time, either people don't or the virus becomes so widespread that it becomes even more troublesome for us, then our levers are similar to what you manage in a mass casualty event, you know, an airplane crash. You start to make really challenging decisions on triaging those that need the hospital and those that don't. And we're already working on plans, if we would need them, in that contingency plan of how we would manage care outside of the hospital setting differently. How would we move home health and use that differently? How would we connect with other individuals in the community? How do we utilize non-clinical extenders who can come in and help support some of those events to allow the healthcare workers to do their work? So I'm optimistic that we're going to work through this. We did it last time. There was so much innovation that came out, and the community really banded together. And so my challenge to the community is we need to be doing that again. We're seeing the same early signs as what we saw in the winter. So we need people to begin banding together and doing those things which lower your risk in preventing the spread of this virus. And I have confidence that we'll get a lot of people to do that.
Dr. Gingrich, two quick questions here, and I appreciate the time. But right now, and I hate to do this, on a scale of 1 to 10, where we are in August of 2021, if an alarm were going off on a scale of 1 to 10, so we do not get into an awful place or a worse place than we are right now as we head into winter, where are we? How crucial is it right now? How loud should these alarms be sounding off on a scale of 1 to 10?
Yeah, I would be in that 7 or 8 range right now, because the line of what we're seeing is almost exactly what we saw in October, November, and hit our peak kind of late December. And so to prevent that from happening, the earlier we can stop acting as though it's not here, the COVID virus, and do the things we know to do that we've already talked about, we need to be doing that and starting that rapidly to try to prevent more infection and more need for hospital resources.
And my final question here, Dr. Gingrich, and it's an awful question to ask, but everything we know that younger people are getting sick, younger people right now do tend to be the more unvaccinated population. School's back in, the training wheels have been taken off schools as far as mandates and Zoom learning and all of that went on last year. One thing that bands people together, not that anybody wants to see the loss of anybody, but the death of a child, the death of a student is an awful thing. We've seen this in car crashes, drunk driving incidents, cancer, everything. If we don't do something, is it inevitable that we are going in Marion County and every place else, we're going to have a student who doesn't make it through if we don't change something?
Yeah, I can't be the bearer saying that it's inevitable. But that's one of the emotional drivers for me, is I am more than willing to give up some of my freedoms, if you will, to try to protect the vulnerable. And right now, the 12 and under, especially, who cannot receive the vaccine, to me, are some of the most vulnerable at this point. And so finding a way to try to help lower the risk of those younger children from getting COVID-19, even though they are more likely to not require hospitalization, the more that we see this in the community, the more likely that a child is going to get ill, or an immunocompromised child, somebody with some other significant illness, could get infected. So for that, I it makes me willing to do the things that I know to do: get my vaccine, wear a mask, and social distance as much as possible.
With 20 seconds left, what keeps you up at night right now?
Thinking about all of the healthcare workers, not just here in Marion, but overall, who are so tired in remembering what this was like and trying to keep their spirits up and provide the resources for them so that they can provide the best care to patients in the communities.
Dr. Curtis Gingrich, president of Marion General Hospital. Dr. Gingrich, thank you so, so much. A very important need-to-know information, and I hope we'll talk again soon.
I appreciate it, Scott. Thanks for everything you do and for giving me the opportunity to talk with you.
Thank you. Stay well and give our best to everybody in the staff. We appreciate what they're doing.
I will.
Thank you. Bye-bye. There we go. Back in about 10 minutes.
Proud supporter of WWGH Radio, providing on-site and remote-based technical support, computer troubleshooting, and network setup for homes and businesses. Website, pctech.biz or adamthecomputerguy.com.